Good morning. Our scripture this morning is from Matthew 25, verses 34 to 40. Then the king will say to those on his right, "Come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you welcomed me. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me." Then the righteous will answer him, saying, "Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you?" And the king will answer them, "Truly I say to you, as you did it to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me." You may be seated.
Well, this morning we have two special individuals that are part of the Covenant Church in inner city Chicago. The Covenant Church is Jesus People USA. It's a church that was formed almost 50 years ago. And if you remember my good friend Glenn Kaiser, the one who came for the expo and did a concert with cigar box guitars, and that's my connection to Chris and Sandy. And when I met Glenn this last fall, and we were planning the mission fair, I said, "Do you know anyone from Jesus People USA?" It's also called JPUSA for people. And he said, "Well, I have this couple, Chris and Sandy Ramsey, that work with the homeless in Chicago, and they would be really good at this to share about what they're doing there." And so I called them or connected with them, and they said yes. And I don't think they knew how far International Falls was, but they made the journey. Yesterday they got to experience Canada, and they might even go back again. Yeah, if she gets rid of her criminal record, which isn't... Now you open a door there that I have to explain. Okay, a long time ago she protested for pro-life, and she got arrested for that. And so that's on her record, you know, that she stood up for babies. And so, unfortunately, Canada kind of saw that as a mark on her record. But we know that God sees it as probably a blessing. She got in and got to go by Tim Hortons or eat at Tim Hortons in Canada. So she feels good about that. But Sandy's going to share a story, and then Chris is going to come and give the message. So let's give him a warm welcome and have Sandy come up.
All right. Okay. Hello.
Hello.
First of all, I want to, in case we don't get around to it later, I want to thank everybody for having us. I want to thank in particular Pastor Darren and his wife, Brenda, and our wonderful hosts who have put up with us, Andy and Lori, over the weekend. And so I just want to thank them, and I want to thank you all for having us. And I come from, you know, the middle of Wisconsin originally, so I feel like I'm at home. I came from 20 miles from his hometown in Shawano, so I feel like I'm at home here, and I just thank you for welcoming us. I won't go into big, I just have a little story to read here. Of course, you've probably already heard, most of you, we have a large shelter in Chicago, about 300 people. We have a men's program, a women's program, and a family program. This story I will read about from the single women's program. And these are like little snapshots of life I have lived down there, and, you know, hopefully... One night, I was serving food at our single women's shelter program. I noticed a small, elderly woman standing among the mats. She was new to the program and seemed disoriented and confused. Her white hair was disheveled, and she had a very unkempt appearance. When she came through the line, I thought I would get a closer look at who she was and what her needs were. Soon, the serving of the food was over, and I realized the woman had never made it through. I looked for her and found she was already asleep on her mat. She had been too tired to eat. A few days later, I saw the same woman. I realized she was with her middle-aged daughter, who was also in our program, and I learned their names. I marveled how much better the older woman looked already. On another day, I glanced out our glass doors. There, sitting on the stoop across the alley, sat the mother and daughter. It was a beautiful sunny day, and they wore dresses and large, wide-brimmed sunbonnets. They were eating sandwiches as if they were on a picnic, only they were in our alley on a dirty step. Then I remembered back to the first night I saw them. I was thankful for the opportunity to be of just a little bit of help to them. One day, as I'm getting into the van, my eye catches the mother and daughter sitting again on their stoop, waiting for lunch to begin. They both peered out at the same time with their wide-brimmed sunbonnets and expectant faces, looking to see what I was doing. They reminded me of those animated flowers with faces in the Disney cartoons. A verse popped into my head, "Thou openest thy hand and satisfiest the desire of every living being." It is humbling to realize that people wait on us to feed them. I am amazed at the number of women I know from our shelter program when I walk down the street. At first, I'm bothered for the women's sake, and I think, I know where you slept last night, I know what you had to eat, and I even know how you look in your sleep. I think this shouldn't be. They should have more privacy and dignity in their lives. Then I think about how the women see us. The streets are a very hostile place, and they always have to be on guard as they go about their day. The Lord showed me that when they see any of us, of our staff, in their path, across the street, on the bus, at McDonald's, we represent safety to them. We are a light in the darkness to them. They may know us, they may not know us very well, they may not know our name, and some of them may not even like us because of their paranoia. But they recognize our faces, and they know from their interaction with us at the shelter that we represent kindness and stability to them, and all day long the Lord reminds them of himself in that way. We are a witness just walking down the street.
It'll be green. All right. All right, good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. I echo what my wife said to, thank you so much for being welcoming to us and everything and having us up here, Pastor Darren and everybody. We've had a great time, and I encourage you all. I think this is a beautiful church. So like I said, my message here is, you know, it's called the least of these, my brethren. Who are they, and what needs to be our response to them? Now, like we just heard, but I'll read it again for it to sink in, the Matthew 25 scriptures. And Jesus says, you know, for I was hungry, gave you something to eat. And he says, I was thirsty. You gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes. You clothed me. I was sick. You looked after me. I was in prison and you came to visit me. And then the righteous will respond, Lord, when did we see you and we did these things? And then Jesus will say, well, whenever you've done it unto the least of these, my brethren, you've done it unto me. And when you think about that, there's a fundamental question to be asked, right? Who exactly are Jesus' brethren? Are they easy to recognize? Are there any telltale signs that we should be on the lookout for? And I like the way the message puts it. It puts it like this: whenever you did one of these things to someone overlooked and ignored, or ignored, that was me. You did it to me. And now I'd like to read just a brief passage from my book that I just got done writing this last year, Discovering Jesus in the Least, that reveals how I interpret Jesus' statements as it relates to our present-day reality, and also how Jesus himself appears to view all of our collective work and service to the poor and homeless across history. So who are the people that are overlooked and ignored in our present day society? Is it not the inner city poor and homeless? Society at large is not concerned with this portion of humanity. Oh, we hear some talk of care and compassion, but the resulting action is more like putting a Band-Aid on a gaping wound. A little something is offered, but it's not nearly enough. And sadly, it never will be. Why? All I can say is that Jesus knows us all too well. That is why he would say, "The poor you will always have with you." Matthew 26:11. He knew that the poverty throughout our world would never be completely solved, and it's because of the poverty that lives in our hearts. Still, Jesus tells us to bother with these overlooked and ignored souls. For when we do so, we're demonstrating our care for him. Clement of Alexandria, an old Christian teacher, because you know why he was old? No, because he lived back in 215 AD. No. But here's what he said about giving some advice to those of us who are called to serve the poor and the homeless. He says, "Do not judge who is worthy or unworthy, for it is possible that you might be mistaken in your opinion. For by sparing and trying to test those who are well-deserving or not, it is possible for you to neglect some who are loved by God." And this is the viewpoint that's been the driving force behind our work at Cornerstone Community Outreach. Like my wife said, we're one of the largest shelters in Chicago, and we're blessed to be able to do that. And we just feel like we are called of God to serve and treat with dignity all that come across our path. And we want you to know that we couldn't do this work without the help and support of so many organizations and partners. We have tremendous support and funding even from the City of Chicago, Department of Child and Family Services. We've been so blessed to have the backing of Evangelical Church. In 1989, right, we Jesus people became members. And then Cornerstone, which is a separate entity, is a 501c3 nonprofit, became one of the prime outlets for the ECC to become more involved in inner city ministry. And I can say that without ECC's support, both financially and prayerfully, as well as offering much needed counsel and guidance over these many years, Cornerstone would be a mere shadow of what it is today. And we've been fortunate to be members of the Greater Chicago Food Depository. This is how we can receive so much food, meats, produce, you name it. And we are able to use this food to offer our shelter residents 3 meals a day. And also, this food supplies and supports our ability to offer a large weekly food pantry and soup kitchen to so many of the poor and homeless in our neighborhood, Uptown Chicago. And we're so blessed to have an ongoing and never-ending supply of volunteers coming from so many youth groups and church groups from not only the United States, but from around the world. So what does our work look like? I'll let my wonderful wife, Sandy, explain by reading just a quick portion called Awful and Awesome. My wife, Sandy Ramsey, is an amazing woman. And I say this not just because she went out on a limb and married a crazy guy like me, which is true, but because God has truly blessed her with a burden and vision for this work. Sandy's the executive director of Cornerstone Community Outreach. This means she has a lot to handle. She has to lead staff meetings, go to DHS meetings, talk to clients, talk to the police, talk to building inspectors, do a ton of paperwork, figure out budgets, listen to staff complaints and hardships, talk to the bookkeepers, and much more. She is truly extraordinary because God has not only blessed her with the strength and wisdom and discernment to carry out all these formidable tasks, but he has granted her with the ability to go from one aspect of the job to another at a moment's notice. Some management people call it wearing a lot of hats. I just call it supernatural. You see, Sandy wasn't trained for any of this. She just learned on the job over all these years. God has given her abilities she never knew she had, growing up in a small Wisconsin country town. And when she talks about our work with our relatives or with any interested party, she tells it like it is. And there are the two words that she uses to describe it: awful and awesome. Our work is awful, she says, because it's not fun to watch so many fellow human beings struggling so hard just to survive. And it's awful knowing that the situation for so many of them is not going to change that much. There really aren't any magic answers for these folks, and it's even for those who are trying their hardest. But our job is also awesome, Sandy says. The Bible talks about having a special love and concern for the poor wherever they may be found. And we get to carry out a small part of God's care and compassion towards those folks. And that is awesome. Many times our shelter staff will remark amongst ourselves how we're constantly living in the midst of a miracle. It's a miracle that all our guests get along as well as they do. It's a miracle that God continuously provides more supplies, more blankets, more food, more finances to keep all of our four shelters up and running. It truly is amazing. It truly is awful. It truly is awesome. And now I'd just like to simply list just a few principles for anyone desiring to reach out to the poor and homeless, wherever they may be found, in the big cities across America, suburbs, small towns, right? And even right here in International Falls. Number one, right, accept them and befriend them. Take an interest in them as a unique, valuable person made in the image of God. Get to know them. Get to know them as real people. One thing I've observed over the years is that we've met so many characters, so many interesting and intriguing souls. But there's something else I've come to believe in the midst of doing this work. And that is the fact that we're all characters, and I'm one of the biggest ones. Let me explain from another passage in my book. I was talking with one of my favorite guests who visits us quite often. She's very outgoing, very simple, very loud. She comes off kind of crazy. She also exhibits a strong faith, and she brings me a lot of joy. After she left this one time, one of our Japuza volunteers came over to me and said, "You're what my wife would call a weirdo magnet." "Oh, really?" I responded. "Yeah, I guess I am. I guess it kind of comes with the territory." And then thinking about that observation for the next few days gave me more than a few chuckles. It's true that I do seem to attract more than my fair share of folks who are looked upon by the world as crazy, unstable, or weird. Now, I have my own explanations as to why that is. Somehow these folks feel comfortable around me. What's more, I am genuinely intrigued by the wide variety of souls that come through our doors. But more to the point, I readily admit that I have a crazy, goofy side to my personality. And it simply pops out whenever I'm around these types of folks. Yet another concern arises when we consider the current cultural implications of the word weird. When we refer to someone as weird, we usually mean it in a negative sense. But one dictionary definition states that weird can mean odd, unusual, or fantastic. So, when we see that definitions such as these allow for a positive spin on the whole idea of being weird, and I'd like to believe that this is how God himself views many of the characters we encounter on any given day. He might even say something like, yes, this person may come off a little weird in your eyes, but really, they are simply an utterly unique and wonderful expression of a human being whom, by the way, I created. Now, can anyone find anything weird about a perspective such as that? I don't think so. Number two, listen and learn from them. Whenever you're talking or mingling with any needy folks, find out what's important to them. Be yourself, but be slow, be natural, be discerning, and don't be overly judgmental. A lot of homeless and poor folks already have a lot of low self-esteem. Many feel they're not worth much in our eyes, and some even feel that they're definitely unlovable. So approach folks with compassion. Look for positive things about them, things that you can encourage and compliment. Ask yourself, if you were in this person's shoes, how would you want to be treated? I mean, isn't that what loving our neighbors as we love ourselves is all about? Number three, we need to work as a team when we're looking out. Working with the homeless and the poor is not easy work, and it can be very challenging. This work is not meant to be done alone. We need to work together. We need to give and get advice and wisdom from each other, our fellow church members, and whoever else can help or give us guidance as we work with those in need. Number four, we're thinking about the larger issues of the homeless, of meeting the needs of the homeless. We need to connect with other caring for folks and organizations, especially when you're trying to get them housing and jobs. One of my fellow workers, Jeremy Nichols, has been involved in assisting many of our clients obtain and keep their own housing. But it is by no means easy. And I'd like to quote Jeremy in a recent blog he wrote, "The journey from homelessness to housed can be extremely complicated and tricky. No one person or agency has all the answers." We need to collaborate by finding partners we can trust and create an informal network of people who we know we can rely on. This is where discernment is imperative, because networking with the right people at the right time produces results. And that's what we want, don't we? And another thing, working with the homeless will be sacrificial. We ought not to take any insults or frustrations personally. We aren't going to solve every problem, and we're not supposed to. But serving the poor and homeless will stretch us many times to our limits. You just never know how God is working. And sometimes it's the least likely of the least that will be changed. And this is illustrated by a story in the book called You Saved Me. It was another busy day, and I was in the kitchen gathering some food for a former resident. All of a sudden, my ears were struck by a loud screech that I've heard before. "Chris, Chris, Chris, I need to see you," the voice shouted. I looked up from boxing some food to notice this lady peering around the kitchen door. It took me a second, but I recalled that she had frequented our dinner guest program about a year ago. "Okay, okay," I yelled back. "I'll be out in a minute." About 10 seconds later, this lady peers back in around the door. "Chris, Chris, I need to see you right now." She was beaming from ear to ear. "Okay, okay, okay, I'll be right there," I replied, a little put out. When I went out to greet her, memories started flooding back of this lady, Julia, and how she used to complain and throw tantrums at our meal quite often. But standing now before me was a very different woman. "Chris, I just wanted to see you," she said, "and I just wanted to give you this card and this gift for Christmas." Well, thank you. thank you very much," I replied as I took the gift and the card. "You saved me, Chris," said Julia. "Remember when I used to have such a hard time, and you were so nice?" Well, thanks, Julia," I said, "but I really appreciate that. But remember, I can't save anybody. Only Jesus can." "Oh, I know that, Chris," she readily agreed. "I read my Bible. I trust in Jesus. I know only Jesus can save anyone. But you were so nice to me when I was so mean." May God bless you and your family during the holidays. We hugged for a second, and she told me that she had a place to live now and that things were going much better for her. Then she turned and was gone. And all I could do was smile and shake my head at Jesus. And always have the big picture in mind, another point. Nothing is instant, and many folks are not going to change just exactly like we'd like them to. But we need to realize that turning one's life around, especially those coming out of such hard and difficult circumstances, is not easy. And here's a few, you know, here's just a few issues that our folks face a lot right in the inner city of Chicago. Jobs, you think about jobs. Jobs that pay a living wage, you know, something you can really live on, are not only hard to find, much less keep. Affordable housing, extremely hard to find. In Uptown, we've lost hundreds of units of affordable housing in the past 20 years. And they're not being replaced. The majority of our folks cannot afford even the lowest market rate rent. If it wasn't for subsidized or extremely neglected and run-down rooms for the poor wouldn't have any options at all. Now let's just add on. Think that a person has those things facing them. Now add on two of these more factors. Just as if they just had two of them. Broken family relationships, mental health issues, physical health issues, substance abuse issues, having a felony on one's record. And how about the challenges of old age? So you get the picture. This is an extremely daunting challenge. And this is why sometimes, you know, a success story is simply that if our clients can move out and get a new life and just have simple, basic housing, that's a beautiful thing. But we just need to realize, remember, that for a lot of our folks, and for a lot of different reasons that I just mentioned, a productive middle-class lifestyle, with all that implies, is simply beyond them. Too often we think that success would mean that their lives would look like ours, when they really aren't interested in or capable of living like us. Right here at the end here now. And how do we view everything, this whole total picture? Finally, we need to know that God cares so much more than we possibly ever could. This is where our hope must remain. God cares, and he can work big miracles and small miracles, like securing a basic roof over one's head. And we need to always know that Jesus has plans and desires for each person that we can't even imagine. We just get to walk alongside each person, get to be their friend, and hopefully be a small part of their support system. We get to see God at work. We get to see God work his grace and mercy and compassion in so many lives, including ours. And this is where our ultimate hope must lie. Not only for those Jesus has called us to serve, but for those of us who are called to serve the least. I know for myself and my wife Sandy, if it wasn't for Jesus's grace, mercy, and strength in our lives, there would have been no way we could have hung in over all these years. For me, it makes all the difference in the world to know who I'm doing it all for. And it's, as we know, it's all really for my Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. And for that, I give him all praise and honor and glory.